Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
The key to winning big is using every little bit of knowledge to your advantage. At Odds Checker, we give you the edge. Better odds, better picks, and better offers to make you a better bettor. Why settle for less? Quickly compare the odds at every sportsbook to ensure that you're getting the best price to maximize your return. Visit us at www.oddschecker.com/US. Odds Checker. Sports betting smarter.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 24th, 2020. You're listening to the greatest PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Are you over the cold? Oh, we survived winter, right? It was 2 days long?
Yeah, I marked myself on Facebook today.
Safe for winter.
We did have a kickball game last night, and funny thing is, we had like people like, "Are we still playing? Are we canceling?" Because we cancel volleyball when it gets below 50. Stuff you only hear in Florida, right?
Right.
And I'm like, "No, it's kickball. We're gonna have fun." And then so we all showed up like Randy from A Christmas Story, and I lost about 90 pounds last night. I was so hot afterwards. And then our sponsor has a little fire pit out at in the back of their place. Visit Coastal Canteen and Grill when you're in Safety Harbor, by the way. And so we went there to sit by the fire, and I'm like, I'm so hot! I can't believe I'm so hot right now!
We are really wusses, aren't we? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Damn proud of it.
I know.
I suffered 26 winters in Ohio. The rest of you are not as smart as we are, so...
It's hilarious, too, because, you know, one of my friends from back home always calls me, like, every other day, and we go through the whole, it's cold, so hot, all this crap. But when he comes here, and the air conditioning is set on, like, 75 or 70, he's sweating. And it's 73 in the house, and he's sweating. And so I was telling him that, like, our thermostat here is one of those digital ones, and I've never actually programmed the heat version of it. I've always programmed the air, because the air is on 99% of the time of the year. And so every year when we actually need the heat, it's got this default setting of 62. And so if I don't make it, say, 70 or 72 or 73, at every interval of like 4 hours or something, it goes to 62. And I keep forgetting to reprogram it. So I'm sleeping in bed, and it's like, it goes to 62, and I'm freezing my ass off when the house is like 64, and he would be like, oh, this is perfect. When he comes down here, he puts the air conditioning on like 62. I mean, you've got to be kidding me, but it's true. Your blood thins. It really does down here.
I wish the rest of my body would thin, too, but just my blood, right? So.
Oh, man. All right, let's talk poker.
All right. Pennsylvania's online poker room earned $2.5 million in December, its first month in operation, as part of an overall haul of $22.4 million for all forms of online gaming in the state. Meanwhile, online poker regulation has also been introduced now in New York, Nebraska, and Kentucky.
How surprising is that? I mean, that's phenomenal. Both on more than one thing here. I mean, first of all, the money that Pennsylvania make, that's money that they never would have seen had they not done this. That's a lot of money to me, right? And then Nebraska and Kentucky? Are you kidding me? What's next, Utah and Georgia?
Alabama? The Kentucky is, if you remember back, Kentucky is the one that sued to have like the online poker room domain shut down.
Right, because of the horse racing. They wanted to protect their horse racing.
Yeah, as if they had any jurisdiction to like rule the world in little Kentucky there. But so that's what's hilarious about now. that is like not even a 180. That's almost like, what, a 270, right? It's like a complete overcorrection. So now, of course, you know, online poker regulation has been introduced in thousands and thousands of states, it seems like, and I've gotten so far in six of them so far. So won't get too excited about that quite yet until we see what happens. But not terribly surprised by the Pennsylvania numbers. It's the largest state so far to get in on this. So
yeah,
a lot of poker players there. Yeah, you weren't expecting to see these kind of numbers in West Virginia or Delaware, but certainly Pennsylvania is a pretty big state. So, and those, and keep in mind too, those are they don't have any liquidity agreements with any states either. So right, that's all right. Pennsylvania players playing against Pennsylvania players. So if they're ever able to open up liquidity and agreements with those other states, that'll probably help immensely as well, and make those other states a little bit more viable as well too.
So. I'd say if New York passes it, I mean, the amount of people that live in that state, it'd just be insane. Plus the fact that it's surrounded by other states that are absolutely just filled with
people. Think about that. So you can go from New York to Pennsylvania to New Jersey in about a half an hour,
yep.
if that, and be able to play poker in all three of them. Now it might be slightly different rooms, so you might have to log out, but I'm like, that's a big chunk of the Northeast right there taken care of if New York can get this through, which I would imagine it's the most likely of these three to see that as well.
Yeah, I agree. That's great, though. Again, it trickles in, but the more and more it happens, the more and more likely it is that federal regulation's right behind the them. So I'm hoping this happens. It's Nebraska. Wow.
Well, and here's the other thing too: is you need these big numbers and headlines to sell it on lawmakers in other states. You know, you would think they would be smart enough to understand that we just said that Pennsylvania's a big state and Delaware's a small state. But as a former elected official, I can tell you they're not all the sharpest tools in the shed.
Yeah,
always the warmest fries in the Happy Meal. But so you know, whatever it takes to get it through, it's it'd be quite good. So. Big numbers help.
Yeah, small sweet.
All right, according to PokerFuse.com, PokerStars is testing allowing players to make side bets during games, wagering against the house on what their next hole cards will be and what the flop will be. Any money wagered on these bets will come from the player's Stars wallet and not from their chip stacks. A very important part for my co-host.
That's absolutely right. And you know it's right. You like to bust my chops about the Derby Day, but that...
I have never seen anybody cry more than Chris Cassenza at a home poker game during the Kentucky Derby.
You guys kept going south with your stacks and making bets that I wasn't going to make. It's not right.
I can still hear the primal wails from Cassenza every time we took a dollar out of the pot to put it in the Kentucky Derby bucket that night.
There's no way that's fair. What's next? Waitresses serving us drinks that I have to tip?
Oh, man.
But this is very interesting, though, and I don't know. I guess I just don't understand how it would work. I mean, I guess you'd have to know the person at the table with you would want to make a bet with you.
Well, you're not making it against somebody else. You're making it against the house.
So it's house. Always against the house. Okay, because I know Star's wallet. I just thought it meant you had to have money.
Obviously you have to have money in your wallet in order to make the wager, but you're betting against PokerStars on these wagers, so odds are obviously not in your favor in any of these ever. So I mean, a couple things. I mean, one, these side bets are where casinos make their money on everything. You go to it used to be like Caribbean Stud Poker was the first one to come out where they had the little extra bet for a dollar. People were like, "Ooh, I can win $100,000 with this dollar." And I'm like, "Yeah, you can win $273 million in the Powerball with that dollar." But yeah, you knock yourself out trying to win that $100,000 for the same odds. But whatever. So they love that. And it's so much that it's gone to every. I mean, it's hard to find a blackjack table now that doesn't have 19 different side bets on it. So they're clearly popular. And. So, in one sense, where it's good for the game is it keeps people probably at the table a little longer, right? So, I mean, if you're on a streak of 10, 15 hands that you folded because just were horrible cards, right, which happens in poker, right?
Right.
You might decide, forget it. Seinfeld's coming on. I'm going to log off and go watch TV instead. But if you got something, you know, it's just like the hamster wheel. You got somebody dropping little pellets in your cage. You're going to stay there a little longer and... that's what these kind of things do. So that's good for keeping games together. Now, the downside is, as we mentioned, these bets, we haven't seen what the odds are yet, but I got to think PokerStars isn't doing it unless they think they're going to make money off this, right? So
right.
I'm assuming the odds are not at all going to be player-friendly, and therefore, you know, those stars' wallets are going to shrink every session a little bit with these things. So, you know, you can play it out where it could harm in the long run that way, but in the short term, I would imagine it's going to keep people at the table a little bit longer. So
now, if ever anything was ever going to perpetuate the whole rigged online thing, I would think that people who lose these bets are going to be like, PokerStars knew two hearts were coming on the flop, so when I said it's going to be two, you know, I mean, you know that that's all this is going to do is just piss people off. Off though, I mean, I guess they think it's worth it to have to deal with the PR headaches of people complaining about rigged, you know, random card generators and stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're always going to have that, I guess. I mean, I guess outside of the poker part, I'm like, online casinos are everywhere now. I mean, it's hard for you to play in the States, but in other words, you can go on and play a slot machine online, which I think is just insane, right?
Right.
As I think about it, and then the trust that it's, you know, being properly managed. Though, I mean, what makes you think it's any more regulated or properly regulated when you go to a, you know, a brick and mortar casino and you play a slot machine, right? It's the same thing. It's still an electronic machine, right? You don't know what's going on. I mean, you just have to trust that there's gaming regulators that make sure it's right, right? So I don't think theoretically there's any difference with it online or not, other than the online ones. Well, most of them are regulated now, so that doesn't have anything. But look, you got me all excited about that. But the poker is an interesting element to that argument, right? Because poker players, obviously, we're trained to believe that it's a skill game, which it is. So therefore, we all think we're more skillful at it than we really are, right? And then when you lose, it's not because you misplayed the hand. It's because online poker's rigged, right?
Right.
You know, but the easier explanation that doesn't implicate you. So, yeah, this is one more reason now for you to pay attention a little bit more to, quite honestly, things you shouldn't be paying attention to and complaining about it. And I think that's what's going to be interesting, too. So if you are a poker player and you're not playing these side bets, but you're at a table with a bunch of people playing them, that's one more distraction for them, right?
Right.
Makes it a little bit better for you. So I would say on balance, I'm in favor of this. We'll see what happens with it, though. But
anything that can keep poker in the zeitgeist and successful, I'm all for. So I have no complaints about this at all. I would never Google's do it.
Zeitgeist.
What?
Google's zeitgeist.
But for me, there's just, you know, there's no interest in me in gambling stuff I can't control, you know.
Wow, this is a shocking development.
I know, especially like when people want to take money from my competitor stacks and put them on horses when
hey,
I'm trying
to game too.
When I'm trying to win their money. It's not fair. But I got my way. I whined and moaned so bad that you guys wouldn't you wouldn't do it.
Squeaky crank that gets the wheel.
Any updates? Our Restock the Shelves Food Bank initiative with Blue Shark Optics is in its final week. Go to antiupmagazine.com/restock for more details on all events. And remember that your home gang can participate by collecting food and or cash for a local food bank in your community. Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com after your home game with a photo, what food bank you benefited and how much you collected, so we can include you in our wrap-up article in Antiup Magazine. So listen, if you're going to do this, take a nice, clean, bright photo of if you guys want to be in the shot, if you want the food in the shot, if you want the money in the shot, if you want handing a huge check to the food bank people, whatever it is, just when you take the photo, make it nice and clean and bright and just absolutely usable. Because I've already gotten one photo that we had to go back and forth like 6 times to get them to send me a photo that was clean and bright And so I wanted them in the magazine in the worst way, so we finally worked that out. So make sure if you do it. I want to make sure you're getting into the magazine. We don't want anybody complaining about us because we're cool. All right, two big deadlines are coming up rapidly for listeners who want to join us on our first two Antioch Poker Cruises of the year. This Wednesday is the last day to guarantee our posted rates for our Easter sailing from Tampa to Cozumel, and February 21st is the last day we'll have staterooms available for a 15-night transatlantic sailing from Tampa to Amsterdam with stops in Bermuda, the Azores, and Ireland. The ship is sold out, and by the way, we only have like a couple of cabins left. I just learned that this morning. So really, if you got to call us if you want it. Ginny just told me this morning. And then don't forget, we have a 7-night Western Caribbean sailing from Galveston, Texas, coming up in October. For all the details, visit antiupcruises.com. And please check out our 11 vintage Antiup logo designs on merchandise at antiupmagazine.com/shop to check out t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Antiup Magazine, Antiup Pokercast, or Antiup Poker Tour logos. Okay, each week we spotlight a listener who emails us podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This comes from Sean Hamstra. So I'm staying at Treasure Island in Las Vegas next week for some work. Most of the daytime will be filled, but I want to play some low-stakes cash or tournaments some evenings. I'm feeling pretty intimidated as I'm much more home game and small room type guy. And the cruise, of course. He says, I probably shouldn't be, but it's Vegas. I've never been. In your opinion, which room or rooms would you recommend for low-stake, no-limit hold'em? Looks like Mirage and Venetian are basically connected to my hotel. Also, I definitely plan to stop on Fremont Street. I want to see if I can peek from a distance into Bobby's room. Is that possible? Any other history points I should try to check out? One thing I want to say before we talk about any of that stuff is do not be intimidated, okay? You say you're a small room type guy. Well, first of all, you can only play at one table anyway. All right, so it doesn't matter how big the room is. As long as you're playing at a table, that's cool. But if when Scott and I talk about this now, we're going to tell you about some places that you know you might find regulars and stuff. But there are a lot of rooms that have people just like you who are they feel like they should be intimidated. And then there's a lot of people there who are in town for conventions and just want to say, hey, I want to learn about all those poker things about, and there'll be terrible players there. So you should win some money when you're out there. It shouldn't be too tough. So don't be intimidated. Be confident. All right, go ahead, Scott.
Right. So this is not making fun of my new friend Sean, who enjoyed meeting on the cruise, but it's just a statement because I talked to maybe three or four non-poker, non-casino people, just friends around town, right? Like literally in the last couple of weeks, who have never been to Vegas and are going there for the first time, and I'm wow. Like, it just blows my mind, right? And again, we've been in the gaming industry, so I mean, it's we should. Not expect that people are in Vegas, but I was going to Vegas since I was like 14 years old. So
right.
Back when it was cool, not now where it's just so overbuilt and busy and crazy. But it just does always amaze me that there's always a Vegas newbie out there every week that I meet. So so I hope Sean had a good time. He sent this in last week, so he's probably already gone and home. But a couple things. I really like what you said. I mean, you're right. You shouldn't be intimidated. There obviously are pros that live in Vegas and play, make their living there. Very, very, very few of them play at the low stakes cash or tournament. So you are probably not going to run into any pros at those levels at any room you go to, right?
Right.
Where you're going to run into mostly everybody, and even at higher stakes, are tourists. And if you play as much as I know Sean does play, you're right. You should not be intimidated at all to go out to Vegas and play. What is intimidating, and I appreciate him asking, is where you go. Because there are lots of poker rooms. I don't know how many we're up to now. I mean, it's been up and down since we've been in business. But 20, 30 poker rooms in Vegas, right? At least.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas proper or whatever you like to call it is like 50-something. But, yeah, like right on the strip and everything, you got like 20 or stripping downtown.
So, the intimidation is trying to figure out where to go to maximize your value. So, and, you know, they come in a couple different groups. So, you know, you have the bigger rooms like the Arias, the Bellagios, Venetians, Wynns. That, are the big established poker rooms, right? So they generally have better structures, but higher buy-ins for the tournaments, right? So that's one of the things to remember in Vegas is generally those things are in lockstep like they are anywhere. So
yeah.
The higher the buy-in, the better the structure you're going to get, the lower the buy-in, the worse the structure you get, right? So the tourist rooms, which are most of them there, are really catering to those weekend warriors, those folks that maybe don't even play in a home game, but just, hey, I'm in Vegas, I want to play poker, right? And to get them in, you know, they'll do tournaments as little as $30, 30, 40, 60, those kind of dollar, right?
Yeah.
But just don't expect those structures to be fantastic. But if that's the kind of money you want to spend, those are everywhere. So,
and I guarantee you're not going to come up against a pro playing a $25 Singo or Turbo or something. So,
but just prepare for the structures that are going to move fast.
Yeah.
They're not designed to make you a complete tournament player. They're designed to get you into the room and then hopefully play cash. So that's just the way it is. So if you're looking for a really good structure, you're looking in probably at least 125 buying up to probably 200 is probably more realistic. So so go into it like that. But cash games are pretty much the same everywhere. It's 1-2, 1-3, no limit. Not much difference really anywhere, I don't think, in my opinion. And then, of course, if you're a limit player, it's a little harder to find those. But, again, those games at 4-8 and lower play like they should play, 4-8 or lower. Because it goes back to what you said. I mean, the intimidation just shouldn't be there. So,
yeah.
He did ask specifically on his location, and Treasure Island is a good location. I steered him towards the Mirage for tournaments and cash games. Venetian is a really nice room with a lot of features and probably a really good variety. So if you're looking for non-Hold'em, that's probably where I'd suggest in that neighborhood right there. My Fremont Street has always been my favorite part of Vegas, even back in the days when I was a kid. Again, the whole thing has changed. All Vegas has changed now, and it makes me cry how much it's changed. Just not what I remember growing up. But Fremont Street is still the value play for everything from hotels to food to gaming. It's just changed like everything else now. So it's very much more hipsterish. I like the way it's changed, even though I'm not usually not a big fan of the hipster stuff. But the last couple times I've gone, I've barely left Fremont Street. So I stay down there, I play down there, I drink down there, great bands play down there, and a lot of other fun stuff. So definitely worth a visit down there. And you can still, I believe, still get your picture taken with $1 million of Binions, which is a nice little souvenir that... so that's nice. Now, just poker wise though, you're not going to find too much down there. The Nugget is the big room down there, and then Binion's has a much, much smaller room than they used to, but I think that's about it down Fremont Street. But worth at least taking the Deuce bus down there for a night, right? And then Bobby's room, again, it's been a while since I've been in the Bellagio, but last time I was there, you can get a pretty good view of that if you want.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like down a hallway with a secret password, you know, Michael McDermott looking at the camera, it'll be let in, right? So you can't poke your head into the room, but you can watch players play. And what I like about the Bellagio, again, it's been a while since I played there, so maybe things are different now. But the last time I played there, I mean, you can get on a 1-3 table or a 4-8 limit table, and depending on the table, you could be pretty close to Bobby's room and be able to gawk at it without, you know, looking like you're gawking at it, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So,
if I can make a recommendation, always pick up Our Magazine. Not because, you know, we're in the business and we own it and we want you to pick up Our Magazine, but the fact that we have so much information back there. You'd be surprised how many rooms in our Where to Play section in the back don't have, like, promotions, because they're just so busy and they're who they are. You know, they don't need to do promotions to bring people in. But if you like promotions, or there's so many rooms that don't run smallish tournaments because they have an incredible cash game business and they like to be the official, you know, World Poker Tour giant room where we have only $1,000 buy-in tournaments or something. So if you pick up Our Magazine while you're out there and look at the back, we pride ourselves, Joe, our Where to Play editor, just really excellent with keeping all those current and up to date, so you'll know really what's going on when you're out there. That right there, that resource is really valuable. So and the other thing I'll say is, when I was out there, and it's been a long time since I've been out there, but I love the Mirage for no limit hold'em, and most of the strip rooms you can make money on, because that's where the all of the tourists are. I mean, that's it. You know, when you start to get outside of it, like Summerlin and Henderson and all that, or if you're not planning on being on the Strip, then you're going to find all the locals who were, as Fassel used to call them, crusty old salts. and it's hard to get a dime from those guys.
Tougher separated from the money, right?
Yeah. So, but when you're playing the strip, right where you're located, you're in a perfect spot, right where you are. If he hasn't gone yet, and if not, but the strip is a great place to make money. Flamingo, I made a lot of money at Flamingo. I mean, some of them, even Caesars, we made a lot of money at Caesars too, which I thought for sure I wouldn't, because it just sounds so intimidating playing poker at the Caesars, you know, or whatever. But that and like I said, the Mirage. Mirage is my favorite place to play. I don't know what it was. I just loved playing there. Maybe because they talk about it in the Rounders. I don't know. But I just loved playing there. And I made money there. I did run in the pros there a lot, though. Remember that pro that was blind, Hal?
Yeah.
I played twice with him. I mean, what are the odds, right? But I played twice with him at the Mirage at the same table. I just avoided him. You know, I think I lost a pot to him here and there, and I won a pot here and there. But for the most part, you just got to recognize who is the better player at the table and avoid him when you have to, you know, and then, but don't be intimidated ever, especially in Vegas.
Yeah, the other thing, a general idea I would give you, because there are a lot of rooms there, the poker rooms that are visible to the public or along, you know, hallways where gaming tables are right outside it.
Yeah.
Those are generally going to be your softer rooms because, you know, they are attracting people. The rooms that are hidden, you know, on the second floor, in the back, or somewhere where it's harder to find, you're not going to get those, you know, the husbands and wives that are like, oh, honey, you love to play poker, don't you? I'm going to go to the spa. And then dumps them in there and dumps his $200 or $300 to you, right?
Exactly.
So, whereas, you know, when they actually find it, you don't get that impulse kind of in there. So it's just a general idea.
Yeah, high traffic areas attract people who don't know how to play. So.
And the last thing you said is any other poker history points. And I actually thought about this for a while, and I couldn't really come up with any. It's interesting that I haven't really thought about that. I guess most of the poker history happens in poker rooms. So if you're going to go to those rooms, I mean, that's what made me think about the $1 million down in Binion's. And there is, even though Binion's room is smaller now, not open all the time, they do have still a lot of poker pictures and history on the wall. So that would be a place to check out. And then, you know, particularly because that's where the World Series started and all that. But but I don't know any other poker history sites. Maybe I'm sure I'm missing some. I'm sure people will let me know what I'm forgetting. But
well, that's the big thing, right? That's really the big thing is, I mean, if you go to Binion's, I mean, even if you're outside on Fremont Street, you remember that's where Stu Younger played outside that one time they had it outside and everybody was sweating their, you know.
Yeah, but even that's not like marked. So
right, no, exactly.
Yeah. Go back and watch videos and try to figure out where exactly it was and stuff. And
hit the Rio. You can go to the Rio. I'm sure that, you know, if you want to make that trek up there from Treasure Island.
Yeah, here's the thing about the Rio, though. I mean, the circuit is going on soon, and the circuit's going on, and it might be a little bit different. But without the World Series going on,
yeah.
The Rio is another hotel, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But when the series is going on, when you see just literally 500 tables in a single room, and that's a sight to see. So, but when it's not set up, then I imagine it's pretty boring in there.
You know, like, yeah.
You know, maybe a molecular plastics convention's going on, which probably could be fantastic.
Molecular plastics. Oh, man. Hey, we get the complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to play part one, and then we'll see you on the other side.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a 50-cent, $1, no-limit hold'em home game. The game is six-handed. Everyone at the table bought in for $100, and we currently sit with 117. We're familiar with these players, so we know their tendencies pretty well. The blinds post, the end of the gun, and hijack limp in. We're in the cutoff with the four of hearts, tray of hearts. I like to mix up my ranges quite a bit here, and since we're only one off the button, we make it $5 to go. The button and hijack both call, but the other players fold. With 1750 in the pot, the flop is the 7 of clubs, 4 of clubs, tray of diamonds. So we flopped bottom two pair on a coordinated board. Once the hijack checks, we decide to make a value bet. We put $12 into the pot, bringing us down to our starting stack of 100. The button calls. This player can be kind of tricky. He's a decent player and will pounce when he senses weakness. He started the hand with 145. The hijack folds. With 4150 in the pot, the turn is the 8 of diamonds. I don't think this card changes all that much. If we were ahead on the flop, we're ahead here too. we make it $30 to go, leaving us $70 behind. The hijack thinks for about a minute before putting in a call. There's $101.50 in the pot, and the river is the king of hearts. This pot is a decent size, but a part of me feels like if we check, we're going to get shoved on. Ultimately, we slow down and check. The button thinks for a brief moment before shoving. So, we have a decision to make here. What's the move?
All right, even though it's obviously possible, I'm having a hard time seeing how we are beat here. O'Malley also said that this player pounces on weakness. And, well, after being aggressive on every street, we appear to wave the white flag here. I'm calling.
Yeah, you know, I never know if O'Malley and Hand of the Week submitters give us details like that just to throw us off our game.
I do know they do that.
They do that, right? So he says he pounces on weakness. We show weakness, and he pounces. So are we supposed to fall for this and just call? Or is it that to just get us to call only to see this player turn over a set or king eight? But that said, I still think we're good, so I'm going to call two with you. So here comes part two.
Hello again. Was our opponent slow playing something like 6-5? Did he flop a set? Is it a busted draw? What king could he have? I really can't put this one together, and I really don't want to go bust here. We sigh and fold. Our opponent remains statuesque as he scoops the pot and slides his cards to the dealer. We never see the hand. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, be careful with bottom two pair. Even if you're ahead, you might end up having to fold. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, we'll never know, so no use in wondering what could have been. Folding is usually the safer move when you don't know where you are in a hand, but here I just felt like we had enough information to make that call.
Yeah, I agree. It sucks to not know, but I think we would have won with a call. But hey, you know what? At least we always talk about that too. Folding the better hand sometimes has to happen to be a good poker player. And
well, this is an interesting discussion. It's not a long discussion, but I just I tend to like when I don't know what I lost out on or won, right?
Yeah.
I prefer to have the mystery. I think when somebody shows it just like and I made a bad decision, it sits with me forever. Like I'm always going to remember that, right? I think when somebody doesn't show and you're left guessing, it's painful it's probably more painful right away, right?
Yeah.
But then you forget about it after a while, right? I mean, think back to how many hands you were in where you made a lay down like O'Malley did here. Your opponent didn't show that you can even remember, right? I think they tend to dissipate from your memory eventually and probably pretty quickly. Whereas when that guy just likes to rub it in, like, hey, here's my seven deuce. Ha ha! Thanks for that $4,000. That's going to stick with you for a while, right? So I kind of just move on when people don't show. And then, you know, if I don't know it, I don't know it. There's nothing to dwell on, right?
So that's basically your campaign slogan when you run for city commissioner next time, right? Ignorance is bliss. Vote Scott Long.
Don't ask, don't tell.
I agree, though. I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, from a psychological standpoint, it's way better to have them just not let you know. And then you might be, like, burning up a little bit, thinking, maybe I should have called, maybe whatever. But you will forget it a lot sooner than when the guy shows you seven deuce, and then you're just going to burn for the rest of the night. So, yeah.
Well, and here's the other thing people do, and this comes up on the show a lot, right? Like, oh, later in the night, I bumped into him in the bathroom or at the buffet, and I asked him, hey, what'd you have there? And he told me XXX. I don't know if he tell me the truth. Well, of course you don't know, because he didn't show. That's what's even worse now, because now he's trying to give you information. Now you got to figure out whether it's true or not, and you'll never know.
That's right.
Never know. Don't even ask.
Don't even ask. And by the way, stop talking to people in bathrooms. That's what I get from that conversation. It's always that way, too. I saw the guy next to the urinal, and I'm like, no, I don't want to hear this. Don't talk to me when I'm in a restroom, man.
All right, so Andy Up Nation, next time you see Cassenz and the Pisser, please ask him how his day is going. Don't let him away until he answers you.
All right, let's not get into vulgar humor here, because I was about to, so let's move on.
All right, sign with the advancedpokertrading.com hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. This comes from Michael, and he says, you've had a few too many Vic G hands as of late. Aww. No, I will say, though, we've got a bunch of hands stored up now that do not involve a player named Vic Orgy. So that's good to see. People got the message. Well, anyhow, thanks, Michael, for sending it in. He says, I figured I'd try to send in one for you. If you choose, Ham takes place in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em home game with a 100 to 300-hour buy-in, in which players who pay attention know how everyone plays as it's mostly regulars. It's nearing the end of the session in which I ran my $200 up to squiggly $1,150.
Jeez.
Playing my A game and not getting screwed by randomness. And the villain has squiggly $2,400. Wow.
How much money is in this game? It's a home game for 1 to 300.
I would say for everyone knowing how everybody plays, there's a couple people that don't know how everybody plays.
That's $3,500 right there.
Two people, right?
Oh, my. All right.
And our opponent, again, who has squiggly 2,400, is looking to beat his record 2,600 cash out. We're seven-handed.
This is not even a full table. Oh.
Villain is one of the gamblers at the table. He loves chasing draws and is, in general, a bad lag who has been known to buy in for 1,000 or more sometimes. So there you go.
Just said it was a 1 to 3 buy-in.
Well, yeah, but you can keep buying in when you do.
Okay. All right. So he's multiple buy-ins. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Which would mean three, four buy-ins.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Okay, there we go.
Our hero's in the cutoff. See, three players limp, and we are in the cutoff with the king of clubs, queen of diamonds.
Well, I like to get some of those guys out of this hand if they're limping, and clearly we don't have a lot of good players in this game, because that's unheard of to have that much money, even if they're all rich people and they're just constantly rebuying, like a rebuy tournament. That's a lot of money that's two people holding it. So, one, I want to get some of them out just because I'd like to be against somebody heads up with this hand if I'm going to play it. I don't want to limp with King Queen. So, I'll make it 3x plus those raises probably. So, you know, so 6 plus, I don't know, I'd probably make it somewhere between 12 and 15, something like that.
Yeah, if you're going to raise, you got to do that. I can make a case for folding here. I'm just not a big fan of the king-queen. But in a home game where I know players, then I'm more likely to play it a little bit more. But here's the flip side of that is the players supposedly know you as well, too, right?
Mm, so yeah.
What I would like to do here in those kind of home games is once I feel comfortable that people have pegged me as X, I want to start playing against type, right?
Right.
So if you've been generally folding your hands like this, then you need to be raising. If you've been raising hands like this, you need to be either folding or calling with them and doing a little misdirection. So I will say it's really hard for us to – I mean, one, it's hard for us to analyze hands because we suck. But on top of that, it's hard for us to analyze hands when the players know each other this well, right? Because you're not – there's no way that whoever writes in the hand of the week is going to be able to give us all the vast amount of information they've stored up, right?
Yeah, and the nuances and stuff, right?
Right. So really, this is we're doing this hand as best we can, knowing that we don't know what's really going on. So if I'm in a 1-3 casino cash game, I'm probably getting rid of this. We got three players limping and a seven-hand. I mean, seven-handed, so I don't know. Three players. I think at this point you can't limp. Limp's the worst thing to do here, right? Mm. So I think if you're going to play, you got to play it for a raise. And we are in the cutoff, so you know if I can feel confident that raise is going to give me position, then that's fantastic. I'll do that all day long, right?
Yeah.
If I think the players behind me are going to call, then that puts me in a little tougher spot. So, but all right, our hero says, we raised $20, our hero does.
All right.
Standard raise at this game is 11 to 15, so...
Oh, there you go. So you add the limps to that.
Standard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
So far, so good. Button folds. All right. So that's good. That's what we want to happen. Small blind folds. And our villain is in the big blind. He calls, and two of the three limpers call.
Okay.
Go to the flop with $83 in the middle. And it comes down the ace of clubs, queen of clubs, tray of clubs. And it checks around to us. Remember, we have the king of clubs, queen of diamonds.
Yeah, I love this flop. I mean, I would rather it not be the ace, but then again, I do know I have the nut flush now if it gets there. So I got a middle pair with a good kicker, and I've got the nut flush draw. I got people limping to me, so even if they're trying to trap me, I've got outs. 83 in the pot, I don't mind betting 50. Something like that.
Okay. Well, one, it's not necessarily the nuts. Remember, there's a steel wheel could happen here. So.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not worried about somebody calling my $20 raise right now with 4-5 or 4
deuce. Just pointing it out. Or but yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah.
So we got a pair, and we have the flush draws in our favor right now. So, yeah, you're right. I feel pretty good. So, I'm sorry, you were going to bet how much?
About 50. Because either way, I can represent the ace. You know what I mean? Because of my raise preflop. And then if not, I still have middle pair with a good kicker and a nut flush draw, or a nut flush draw, as we like to call it.
Yeah. All right. Our hero says, my thinking at this point is that I would bet all of my hands in this situation. I can get calls from worst flush draws, and the villain would call the worst queens too. If I get a call from one of the passive players or the made flush, I can improve to beat them or bet them out of the hand on future streets. The villain check raises to 160, and it folds back to us.
All right, so this guy is trying to break his record, right? So this guy is, like, hoping to take it down right now with that check raise, making it seem like, you know, we already have the flush or some weird thing. So I don't think I'm going anywhere for $80 when I'm up to almost $1,200 from a $200 buy-in. So I don't know if I'm going to raise again, because I don't want to get it all in with this guy in a draw with one middle pair. But I think I would call here and then see what he does on the next street, especially if we get there on the next street. It'd be fantastic. But I think I'm going to call.
So the interesting thing is he doesn't say what he bet before, right? We said 50, but he didn't say.
Oh. Well, if you check raise at 160, then I'm thinking we probably bet, I don't know, 50?
It's probably next. Yeah. All right. That's interesting. I just realized that information was missing. But yeah, whatever it was, with the stacks that we have now, I'm willing to call here and hit that club and take down this pot and maybe get more out. Right. All right. Our hero says, knowing he's looking to beat his record, I'm thinking he's extra loose here. Hands he'd raise with that I am behind are made flushes. Any ace jack or worse, he'd 3-bet any better aces pre. Queen tray or set of trays, hands I'm ahead of that he does this with, flush draws, 7 or better, meeting the strong queens and all gut shots. I don't block. I actually don't count combos in my head at the time, but I figured I'm ahead of that range and call.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, too, is that we don't just need, if we're behind, we don't just need clubs to win. Another queen could come or a king could come that can give us a better, you know, a 2-pair versus probably this guy's naked ace or something. So, or he could just have a decent club in his hand, and he's just trying to break his record or whatever. So, yeah, I still like our chances here. We may even be ahead, so I don't mind just calling and seeing what comes on the turn.
All right, we go to the turn with 403 in the pot, and the turn port pairs the board with the tray of spades. So our board now is ace of queen, queen of clubs, tray of clubs, tray of spades, and our opponent checks.
Well, he did check raise last street, and so sometimes people check raise because they have such a strong hand, they are willing to give you a card, and if not, and you bet, then they want to say, okay, well, now I can bet at you. So if this guy somehow has quads right now, and that's why he checked, because he had a set of trays last street, I'm a little worried. If he had ace tray and he checked last street, some of the things confuse me that I don't know if I would have checked any hand with three clubs on board. So I'm not, you know, to give a free card with a two clubs on board. So I feel like he's making a move. Now that he's checked, I probably should have bet, just because if he check raises again, I think that's just so out of the norm for any play.
I've seen that, though, and it's so frustrating because you have somebody check raise, and they slow down, and then you're like, oh, okay, caught you, and then you bet, and they check raise you again. I'm like, ah!
Yeah. It's a big enough pot. I guess we could
play, but
yeah, I guess we could go to the river hoping, you know, that, oh, they won't think we have a club, you know what I mean, or I don't know. It's a tricky spot now. I'm not sure, you know.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm checking behind here, one, because I'm just not sure what's going on with my opponent. Two, I'll take that free card to get my flush, which may or may not be good now with the board paired. Or depending what he has, you know, we could still boat up here, right? So, you know, a queen would be preferable to a tray, but I'm quite happy taking the free card here. If nothing else, is pot control, because we don't exactly know where we are right now. You know, if we bet here and then he check raises again, as we mentioned, could happen. What do we do with that, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything with that. So, you know, if he wants to give me a free card, I'll take that free card.
Here's the thing that I'm revisiting from my notes. We said that he was a guy that loves chasing draws, and he was generally a bad player, or a loose aggressive player. So, I mean, I'm thinking that maybe he has a draw and I shouldn't give him a free card. I don't know.
Well, what's his draw going to be? I mean, Broadway, if he's like King Jack or Ten Jack or something like that, that would be a draw I'd be worried about. But again, he's only got three of those.
And if it's clubs, we have the clubs covered.
And
so,
if he's drawing the clubs, I hope he's drawing the clubs, yeah, unless he's deuce four or five. I'd love for him to hit here. There's all the more reason for me to check behind. You know, either he's way ahead and we're saving money, or he's behind and we want him to catch up.
Well, the thing that bothers me is the tray takes away one of our outs, because now if he has an ace, he's got aces up, and if we hit our king, it doesn't matter. That doesn't help us anymore, so that kind of sucks. All right, I guess I'll check behind. If I'm in the moment and I'm actually playing this hand legit at the table in the moment, I'm probably checking behind. So I'll check behind.
Here says, though in hindsight the turn was very unlikely to have changed anything at the time, I was glad to see a free river, and so hoping for a club, I checked. I think this was wrong, as I should have bet and folded to a second check raise if we did that. The river was a king, so our final board, ace of clubs, queen of clubs, tray of clubs, tray of spades, unknown king, and our opponent bets out 300.
Wow. All right, so I'm thinking that this guy now realizes that the only way he can win is to bet. I don't think this guy is going to bet 300 after checking. I don't think he was trying for a check raise. It's just so rare. I know what happens, and I know you play a lot more than I do these days, but it's so rare for someone to check raise, first of all, at all. Check raises don't happen that often anymore.
But then the way of the unicorn, right?
Yeah. Right? And then to do it twice in one hand. I have a feeling this guy is just so desperate to win his record now, because he tried to do it earlier on the street thinking we might fold because we were just doing C-bet. And when we didn't fold to his check raise, now he checks to us. We check behind. Now he's like, okay, maybe he's weak. Maybe I can steal it. And he's willing to put out a pretty big pot bet, almost pot-sized bet. He's like three-quarters of the pot. So I don't know. I think that check meant that he wasn't going to check raise. I think he was nervous that we called the check raise, and then now he's looking for a way to get his money. Because the old adage, you know, if you can't win, you bet, you know, because there's no other way you're going to win. I feel like we're ahead. I think we're still up a bunch if we're wrong. But I think we're ahead. I'm not going to open up the betting again, because still we have two pair, but that tray really hurt us. That's the only thing I'm worried about, is that he had an ace. But then again, does he check the ace on the turn after check raising? So
yeah, it really seems to me like he was trying to take it down the turn with that raise. And when we didn't get out of the way, then he's like, all right, I'm going to slow down and see how strong we really are. And then we slowed down, which I think is the reason why we should have done it. Now it emboldened him to think that we're weak and he can buy his way out of this pot. And we improved. And it may not be the way we wanted to improve, but we improved here, right? So I'm calling here, and I think I'm good.
Yeah, I think so, too. He's either got absolutely nothing or we're losing. Yeah, I'm definitely just calling. I'm not raising or folding. But, that's a pretty big bet for someone who just checked the turn. And I don't think he was check raising. So let's both call.
All right. Here it says, thinking that turn check was weakness 95% of the time. He says, I don't know why I didn't think that on the turn. I call, and our opponent insta-mucks.
So he just said, I'm assuming he's thinking he should have bet the turn, but he wouldn't have gotten that $300. The guy would have folded on the turn. You know what I mean? Now you got extra $300.
He's going away right there. So, yes. You're right. I think we got $300 more out of this guy than we had entitled to. So I think we played this really well the way through. So
yeah, you basically just won $500 off this guy trying to win a record. So that's always something to pay attention to. Things like that, you know, little subtleties in the game. Think about it. This guy is making it known that he's trying to beat his record, and it's like the last hand of the night or something like that. You know, this guy is just probably just trying to win that money, but he picked probably the best player at the table to do it against, and that was stupid. So, way to go, Mike. Good job. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.